Welcome back to another episode of Hard Enduro Hosers, the only God-ordained enduro podcast on the internet. I'm Kyle, and I'm here with Alex.
Howdy.
How are we doing, Alex?
Doing pretty good. Got some sun shining. Feeling like spring out there.
Yeah, except for it snowed yesterday.
Yeah, the April Fools.
Yeah.
Mother Nature giving you a nephew.
I know. Wasn't super thrilled about that, but here we are. Yeah, but luckily it's all gone now again, and I'm probably going to get out for a little ride after this. Yeah. So we talked about this, our topic today, on another episode. I think it was when we were talking about the hard enduro races. Maybe?
It was some news at the beginning of an episode.
Yeah. And so I wanted to make a full episode about it because I looked into it a little bit more and it's exciting.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about the Stark Varg electric dirt bike today.
Yeah. And, historically, you mentioned way back, we did a full episode on electric bikes too.
Yeah. And we were talking about whether they were a viable option in beginning of 2020 we made it.
Was it Electric Motion or something that was like an electric pedal bike, one of them?
Yeah.
It was kind of cheesy.
Totally. There was the KTM Freeride e-bike. And then
kind of a kid's bike with an electric motor.
Yeah.
For being honest.
Then we were mostly excited about the Alta.
Yeah.
Redshift.
Yeah. And highly recommend checking out the video that 4.9 did on Alta. And
yes.
That was very interesting.
I enjoyed watching that.
Yeah. Makes me like Harleys even more.
No, it doesn't.
Harley's terrible.
It
makes me hate Harley so much more.
I know. I don't even know why.
Sorry if you're a Harley owner and listen to this, but
probably not.
You should go watch that video. It'll make you sad. Or, I mean, I guess Harley owners are probably like, gasoline.
Yeah.
Who needs an e-bike?
Yeah. Who needs a water-cooled bike?
Yeah.
Yeah. Pushrod engines, I think.
Yeah.
Carburetors.
That 4.9 channel really hates on the Harley. You think of the episode they did on how they got around tariffs and stuff like that and importing fees and how they were government subsidized. And
then why...
Just Weasley.
And then why they've also stayed where they are as far as the development and whatnot.
Yeah.
They're just selling the older generation new bikes that were very similar to 50 years ago or way back in the day.
It's all... I find it interesting.
It is interesting. But
I wasn't a huge Harley fan before.
No. No.
And it didn't make me a Harley fan.
Yeah, I think we've probably said this before, but there's just better bikes to buy for that money.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing that they said in the F9 YouTube videos. They're getting, I think it was that one. They were saying that they sell people on the lifestyle. They don't sell them. That amount of money isn't just for the bike.
Yeah.
It's like a whole lifestyle thing.
I have a relative that's quite high up in the HR world, and they consulted with Harley over some stuff. And she said that the sense of community and everything that was just incredible.
The Harleys. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's better. Thank you. So anyways... But we're not here to talk about that.
Yeah. Electric bikes.
Yeah. The black and chrome is dead to me. So, electric bikes. Stark Varg.
Yes.
Alex was pretty convinced it was a conspiracy.
I thought this was a scam.
Not a conspiracy, a scam.
Part of it was that I could pay with my Visa online and buy one at that moment. And it had a flat rate shipping. What was it? It was $200 or $300.
Something
and I was
like that.
There is no way that you can ship a dirt bike to us way out here, basically in Alaska.
Yeah.
For $300 from Sweden.
Oh yeah. There's no way you can do that.
Yeah.
You pack it up and put it in Canada Post. It's still not going to get there.
Yeah.
Right,
you couldn't ship it to Toronto for $300.
Yeah,
let alone cross the ocean.
Definitely,
they can barely mail a letter to Toronto for $300 today.
Exactly. So it was we were feeling fairly skeptical about it.
And the specs were it was specific but vague. Like, they were all off-the-shelf components that would make sense, but it didn't give you a lot of details on how anything was achieved or how it ran. It just kind of gave you a lot of options that you could kind of order whatever you wanted.
Yeah, and it was very...
I really wanted it to be a thing, though.
Yeah, and it was very intriguing with all the, like, the options they had.
Yeah, you order an 18-inch rear wheel. Just boom, check it off. Yeah, exactly. KYB suspension, yes, sir.
Yeah, exactly. So I did, part of this was because I listened to the owner, the president, CEO, whatever.
The turtleneck.
Mr. Turtleneck with a suit jacket. Yeah. So it turns out his name's Anton Wass.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And interesting fact about him is he was kind of on the ground floor when 24MX was created.
Mm.
So.
The Walmart of.
Yeah. So that's good news.
Yeah. Yeah. So connections?
Yeah, exactly. So
that's good. He's like in the industry and being involved in it though. Like,
yeah, exactly. And he's been there for quite a while and then decided that he needed to do his own thing.
Yeah.
And apparently his own thing was electric dirt bikes. That's never been done before.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. The read I kind of get on Anton Wass is like, I feel like he's kind of the love child between Steve Jobs and Anna Sorokin. I like, you know, maybe, yeah.
I don't really know what to do with that.
I know, but good thing I'm going to keep talking. So, because he's like, he was always talking, you know what, like these are going to be the best in the world. No one's ever seen anything like it. We're going to have 700 dealers around the world. They're going to be the best dealers in the world. Nothing like it.
So he's a hype machine.
Yeah. They said it couldn't be done, but here we are. We've done it. Oh yeah. I guess
so. It's kind of like an Elon Musk of sorts.
Yeah. Sprinkling a little Donald Trump in there.
He didn't swing a hammer at the window, did he? Like the side of the bike? Like, yeah, these plastics are bulletproof.
No, he didn't do that.
Smasher.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. What was that Cybertruck he did that with?
Yeah, the Cybertruck. The glass was bulletproof.
And then he broke it?
Yeah, then he broke it. It just smashed and fell out of it.
Oh, that'd be so sad.
Look how tough these K-Savs are. They're cast magnesium. Hits it with a bat and the case just shatters.
Yeah.
Well, that didn't happen. Just, we're not saying that happened. No. We're excited about this. So
we are excited about this. And that was kind of the one, maybe we'll get to that a little bit later. But yeah, so that was kind of the vibes I was getting from him. He was very pushing the eco-friendly thing, which is good, which is fine.
Yeah.
But yeah, he seemed to think it's the way of the future.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think one of the big things on the eco that we talked about was just noise pollution. Like, we love the sound of our bikes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Don't get us wrong. But riding areas get close because of noise pollution. And if you're out there on an electric bike and nobody can hear you and nobody knows you're there, it's no longer a problem. Like, you have nothing. I don't know. That's the number one reason that so many riding areas get shut down.
Absolutely. And that's what he was saying, especially for motocross.
Yeah.
He said, like, so many motocross tracks are, you have to drive half hour, 45 minutes out of town.
Because of the noise.
Or your city or whatever, because of the noise. And that's the only, that's the closest they can get to town to have a motocross track with all that noise. And he said, if you were all electric, you could have it in the center of town.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't matter.
And this is what shut down our track locally. We had one here. And it was far enough out of town that I don't think you'd hear it in town, but there were people around that were subjected to the noise pollution. And I mean, that's a whole other argument that we won't go down, but it was an easy thing to pick on because
exactly.
You can stand there and measure it.
And our track only lasted, 3 years or something?
Yeah. Before. And it was on and off at the end. Like the last 2 years were pretty limited capacity.
Yeah, that sucks. But yeah, so, and also you'd be able to do so many more indoor arenas and whatnot as well.
Yeah, no ventilation problems.
No ventilation problems.
Like having this in a hockey rink.
Yeah, you could get some loud EDM going. You wouldn't hear any dirt bike noises. You just watch racing.
Yeah.
We're getting pumped up to music. Yeah. So it's all very good so far. It's, I really do think e-bikes are, I think they're the way of the future.
Yeah.
And when, Anton was saying that he didn't want to just build an electric bike. I mean, big sales pitch here. But he's like, if anyone's going to go out and buy an electric bike, it has to be better than any gas bike you can buy.
Yeah, absolutely.
He said, no one's going to buy it because it's eco-friendly or because it's like electric.
Yeah.
He said, people are still going to buy gas bikes if your electric bike sucks.
Yeah.
Said, so they spent lots of time trying to develop it and make it better than any 450 motocross bike, like any enduro bike because of that. And I agree. Like, I think that's such a good way to think about it.
Yeah. And that's part of like when we were looking at the specs and talking about it and we were optimistic. We're like, wow, this is like a well-specced bike. Like, anyone who is knowledgeable about the industry and what's going on would say, hey, like these are the components you should put on it because these are the standard. Like, it doesn't have a cheesy off-brand fork or shock or brakes. Like,
exactly.
I remember it had Brembos on it, didn't it?
Yep.
Yeah. And KYBs.
Yeah. So yeah, maybe I'll go through this
spec sheet
actually. So it was $100 to pre-order.
Yeah.
So that was the
minimum.
And the idea behind that, the $100 pre-order fee, I guess, was just to gauge like serious interest.
Yeah.
He said,
we're just going to put some money where their mouth is.
Yeah. He said they didn't want anyone, like anybody to do it just because it was free to pre-order one or $20 to pre-order one. Said he figured $100 would be good. Then he get serious interest and you can gauge numbers by that. And, you're still committing money, but it's not outrageous amounts of money.
No one's going broke.
Yeah, exactly. $14,900 Canadian for one.
Yeah.
Pretty standard.
Yeah, that's
right in there. Their estimated delivery time was June 2023.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That'd be next season.
Next season.
Kind of mid-season here, but I mean, I guess mid-season for everybody.
Yeah.
Maybe a little early here.
People just have longer riding seasons. But yeah, there was the 60 horsepower and the 80 horsepower battery option power unit option.
I can't imagine 80 in it. Like, considering like the electric, like, let's just talk a little different of some of the changes with electric. You have all of your torque from zero RPM.
Yes, all of it.
All of it. So you have 60 horsepower all the time. Like,
which is outrageous.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So
I can't imagine 80. Like, that's
no, absolutely.
I mean, I guess the upside is you can tune it down. So if you wanted to ride it on the street.
And that's
80 horse would be fun.
That's something I'd like to dive into too. But
But
I was thinking the 80 horsepower option would be worth the $1,200 upgrade entirely for the extended range.
Yeah.
Even if you dial it back to 60 horsepower.
Yeah.
You just get
a bigger battery too.
Yeah. You get a bigger battery and then it just goes that much further.
Yeah.
And I think especially at this point with the electric bikes, it would probably future-proof it a little bit.
Yeah.
Just getting that extra range. And so it's not so far behind in the immediate future when it gets developed even more. Figure that's worth $1,200 to me.
Yeah.
Especially if you're buying it. KYB suspension. And you can, the fun thing about this that I really appreciated is you can order the bike as per your weight as well.
Yeah.
So
it's coming with the right springs.
It's coming with the right springs, which is, that's $400 that I'm not spending after the fact.
I mean, you get into a whole different direct to consumer thing where like, you don't see this, like showrooms can't do this because they have to be stocked with bikes, which is a whole other wormhole that you could go down. But
yeah,
it would be so nice if major manufacturers made this available where the dealer could swap springs for you and it wasn't like an extra service charge or anything.
Anyway, yeah, absolutely.
Good on them. I think this is a great thing.
Yeah, I think it's perfect. And I think it would pull a lot of people, especially it starts knocking down the retail price if you're not spending all that extra money after the fact, like you would with a KTM group product or what have you, because there's lots of other stuff going in there for, I mean, when you start getting into the different springs and whatever else.
Yeah.
So Galfer brakes with Brembo master cylinders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Galfer rotors. Yeah. They're good.
And, I think Galfer,
pads,
calipers.
I thought you said Brembo brakes.
Yeah.
Oh, they're Galfer. What?
I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. Galfer makes calipers.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh, we're falling apart already.
Oh, no. Yeah, they're a pad and disc company.
Oh, okay, yep. Yeah, I wasn't sure if they had calipers or not. Anyways, it's Galfer and Brembo, so you can't really go wrong with that, which is also what they were going for, is Brembo is best in the biz, arguably. Are you looking it up quick?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it'd be Brembo, the Brembo calipers.
Perfect. Even better. But yeah, so that's very good. The bike's display is a smartphone. Mm-hmm. So apparently you can use it as a regular smartphone too. We don't have any smartphone specs because it doesn't really matter at this point. But yeah, so, and that kind of suggests to me that you could also be able to upgrade that phone / display as time went on as well.
Yeah.
If they start developing like new bikes, et cetera, down the line.
It makes you think of aftermarket, like having a different adapter that you can clip in different phones too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And especially like if it's your typical USB-C or whatever, yeah. Like that's just regular.
The other thing that excites me about that is like, I wonder what the app is like yeah. What that experience and the tunability.
Absolutely. And apparently there is an app you can get to run off any phone.
Yeah.
So you can do it. Oh, perfect. Separate as well. Yeah. Leave that thing where it is and then...
Yeah, it just lives there.
Yeah. And then you can tune it, just make your other tunes and whatever else aside from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, getting back, 5,000 bikes were pre-ordered within 6 hours of that thing going up. Wow. The video.
Some Cybertruck shit going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So, apparently they built factories. One factory is for the chassis and one factory is for the power units.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. Yeah.
Downside, they are only capable of putting out 5,000 bikes a year.
Wow. So they have a year's worth of bikes gone, sold. You can get in line.
Yeah. But they are already building another factory capable of making 150,000 a year.
Oh, that's interesting. I'd be afraid of saturating the market.
Yes.
Like if you start cranking out twice, like everyone who wants one is going to get one right away. Those people aren't going to upgrade next year. Like you'll probably own a bike for 2 years and flip.
Yeah.
You know, a lot. Anyway, we'll get into the business of it. That's an aggressive move.
No, it is aggressive. And obviously, yeah, he was saying there was going to be, they have planned and looked at 700 dealerships around the world.
Wow.
Which is pretty noteworthy.
Yeah.
Like you can get one pretty close to wherever you are, essentially.
Yeah. I'm sure probably all the major cities, probably one in Toronto.
Yeah. Yeah. Vancouver, hopefully.
Yeah.
But yeah. So that is, I'd assume, why they really jumped for the huge manufacturing capacity. Yeah. Capacity. And yeah. And then, what am I going to say? Ooh. Yeah. So, 110 kilo weight.
Yeah. So
240 or so?
240 pounds. It's in there. It's competitive.
Which is good. Yeah. And Anton, in his interview, said that the bike should end up being lighter because they've ended up going with more, I don't know, better quality materials.
Yeah.
So they have to use less material of said better material. So it should actually be lighter than 110 kilo. Which is very exciting. And I find it amusing that they said it's 110 kilos fully charged.
That's good. Well done. Well played.
Yeah. And I'm assuming they're doing that just...
to make fun of
the
bike weights that are like out of gas, out of everything. It's like,
yeah.
There isn't even coolant in the thing.
Exactly. So they can go apples to apples with like a 450 full of fuel.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought that was cute that they did that. 2 hour charge time.
Ooh. Yeah, that's good.
What were you going to say before?
It's just the weights, just laughing. 4.9 criticizing bike manufacturers for their weights. And a lot of those weights, the dry weights, they don't even have brake fluid in them.
Yeah.
It's like they wipe everything off the chain. Like, it's just absolutely bone dry.
Yeah, very dry. Feel bad for those forks and suspension.
Yeah.
Going right. in there so dry. But yeah, 2 hour charge time.
Yeah, that's good. Like, that works for me. That's not, I mean, I'm sure that you mentioned the range, like kind of what anticipated hours. I get it changes with use, just like fuel. I mean, people talk about what kind of your typical fuel is where you're on a dual sport, you get 100 kilometers.
Yeah.
And, but if you're riding on a track hard, like you might only get 20 minutes out of a tank or something. And those are very different use cases. And I get that with batteries. Like you can't say, oh, you could ride for 4 hours.
Yeah. And yeah, this Anton was saying that they might run in someone that's doing motocross heats, like a supercross class or whatever. Yeah, they might run into issues if they do two heats, then they need to charge it before the last heat.
So my question would be battery swapping, like having a second charge battery, how much work is it to swap them? Sometimes like the Altas, they were right in the frame and that was
kind of prohibitive. I'm fairly certain it's like the whole thing. Like the whole,
you're like swapping bikes.
You're swapping power units essentially.
Yeah.
I think that's how they've set it up. But he also said they are trying to develop a quick charger to get that time down a little bit.
Yeah.
Which obviously, if you're an enduro guy, it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, the range is definitely just depending on how hard you're yesing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. No, I think that'd be good. And yeah, we wouldn't get like a time frame for the how long the battery lasts because it varies so much. Yeah. So I guess that's kind of irrelevant. But
I remember looking at when we were talking about the free rides and people's opinions changed. Like if you had it on the ego setting and people just like rode as conservative as possible, they had kind of a number, but they're like, yeah, it's unrealistic. Like no one would ever ride like that.
Yeah.
And if you turn it on max and ride like an absolute animal, like, yeah, you could kill the battery in like 20 minutes or something on the free ride, but nobody rides like that either. Like it's not, fitness wise, it's not sustainable. So you're going to be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. And you're not motocrossing your KTM free ride.
No.
Like, that'd be atrocious. I did watch, I think I mentioned this in episode 4 on our electric bike episode. And I watched a YouTube video of a guy just running his KTM free ride on the track.
Yeah.
Fully charged, wide open, as fast as it would go.
Yeah.
He made it an hour 12 or something.
Oh, was it? Yeah. Okay.
Somewhere around an hour. But I was thinking, like, how awful that bike would be to ride on the track
for an hour.
It doesn't have the 48 mil suspension either.
No, that's why. We say it's a kind of a kid's bike with an electric motor. Really,
yeah,
it'd be small. Like they're not a big chassis. The free ride chassis. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Like, trials bike hybrid. Yeah, so that was worrisome to me. But this is. Yeah, obviously, I guess that's neither here nor there. But this bike should be fair but better. The one thing that I like, it's going to be handy to have on this Stark, is they developed a clicker chain adjuster. So every quarter turn is a click.
Yeah.
So you can make sure, like, once you set it up, you can just go, say, like, tighten it 4 clicks.
Yeah.
And then go to the other side 4 clicks and it's exactly the same.
That's handy.
You're not eyeballing it and whatnot.
Yeah. I usually count flats, but I mean, not.
I don't.
Oh, okay.
I also I try and line up the little lines on the little divots, pick a line and try and make sure it's happy.
But those are good little features to add. I don't see like.
Yeah. And that's what this all comes back to, the. Wanting to develop it to be better in every way and just be more attractive.
When you think of value, like I don't see that as adding. It's competitive in price, and with those extra features, why not?
Yeah,
I mean, maybe it could be slightly cheaper if you just put thread inserts in, but
that's,
it's competitive. Like why?
Exactly.
I don't know.
Would you cheap out?
Yeah.
As well.
I'm not.
Yeah.
If I'm switching an e-bike, it's not because I want a cheap bike. Like it's kind of, you have a fixed cost for a bike and that's what they're worth today.
Yeah.
And if you can get as more features and a better bike for that same cost, then I don't know. That's my.
No, I totally agree. You're paying that money for a bike anyways.
Yeah. That's what I've set aside in my head as what a bike costs.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not
going to want the most bike I can for that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So all these things,
motorbike
that they've developed is just being better than any of the competition. And the other thing they were going for was they want to make it easier for everyone to ride and own and maintain.
I'm really curious to see how this comes out. What the better than a conventional bike and questioning things at a high level, what that makes me think of is the BMW G450X, where BMW looked at enduro off-road bikes and said, we're going to build a bike better than everyone else, and we're going to do it. We're going to question everything.
Did they? Did it come out better?
It was different.
Is that the one you had?
That was the one I had. So what people who aren't familiar with the bike, the main pivot for your swing arm went through your sprocket. So your chain adjustment never changed. Your chain length. So as your swing arm traveled, your chain never got it wouldn't get tighter or slacker.
I see that as a good thing.
It's a good thing, but there's a consequence to it. Because your swing arm no longer pointed at where your chain contacts your sprocket when you're generally riding, that you didn't have that snap to hop. And when you would get on the gas, it would pull the swing arm up and the bike would squat more than a typical bike. It came at a consequence. The other thing they did was they made the clutch smaller and put it directly on the crank. I mean, I don't know if everyone listening to the podcast knows, but your clutch isn't actually on the end of your crankshaft. Your crankshaft has a sprocket on it, and that drives your primary reduction, which drives the outside of your clutch basket, and then the center of the clutch basket goes into your transmission after the clutch.
So it's busy.
Yeah. So what BMW did was they said, we can reduce the rotating mass of the clutch by making it smaller. So they made a much smaller clutch that needed to deal with less torque and put it directly on the engine. Long story short.
Shitty bottom end?
It also changes the direction it's rotating, and you ended up fighting it. It didn't work as well because of the direction the clutch was spinning.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I never had a problem with the clutch, but the other thing they did was to save weight because the bike was getting heavy, was they went with a cable clutch, and the cable clutch...
They did not.
It didn't. I don't know. It wasn't that great.
No, it's never great
through,
at all.
I went through a couple of clutch cables, and that's my biggest gripe with it, was that I was constantly... like you and your YZ, you went through clutch cables. It's just...
Yeah, I was to a season, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with the BMW ones, they weren't a standard clutch cable. You don't want to be buying Beamer parts that are just falling out. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm really curious to see, tying this back to the electric bike. I love when designers and engineers question the norm and why things are the way they are.
And try and innovate.
And try and innovate around that. But also being aware and being riders themselves and understanding the full compromises of some of those decisions.
Yeah, and that these things still have to work.
It still has to work as a bike.
You don't want to reinvent the wheel.
It has to just dirt bike because. Really well. And if it is a departure from how a dirt bike normally works, it needs to do it better or be close enough that people aren't whoa, this is different, and they freak out. I mean, it's electric, so it is different.
Yeah, and we need to limit the different.
Yeah, the rest of the bike can't be too strange, right? Otherwise, it won't be accepted.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyway,
very interesting.
A bit of a side tour on.
I agree with that.
Some history of weird bikes that aren't
are trying to rethink.
Yeah.
Motorbikes. Yeah.
And not too long ago, we're not talking about twin shock bikes or anything. This was a fuel injected 450.
Yeah. Not that long ago.
So anyway.
Yeah. That was good. That was good. Really, really appreciated that rant.
Tying it back in, is the Stark a Cybertruck?
Depends.
How many are out there? Are we seeing them? Are they shipping?
We've seen videos.
Of one driving around. Did it self-drive?
It did not self-drive.
Damn.
Josh Hill. Is that his name? Motocrosser? Yeah. Him.
He's got one?
He's
ripping it up?
Yeah. He's the one of the guys.
Mm-hmm.
One of the guys.
Who would you want to see on one of these? Who do you think as a pro that's out there right now that if you slapped him on one and were give him the tap on the butt and say, get at her.
Wow,
who do you think would sell him?
there's the obvious answers, right? My man.
But who do you think would change people's mind and be a good rep for this brand?
Probably Jarvis.
Yeah.
Because he's been on trials bikes, done amazing things. Beyond Enduro bikes, done amazing things.
It's like if Jarvis won Romaniacs on this, it'd be...
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Right? Like, I think it would have to be at that point.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, like, obviously the people that are winning championships right now, there would be some draw, obviously. But I think he'd be a good one just because he's been around for so long and he's done so many things. And he obviously is so successful.
Yeah. So,
and I think just even getting out of the spotlight now would be good.
You know, Webb having a terrible season. Obviously, I'm
horrific season.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm a fan. But I don't know that he would. I'm just thinking of like the pull, where if you threw him on one, I don't know that he has quite the pull. I'm sure he'd appreciate it and sell it well as an engineer.
Yeah.
But I don't see him like changing people's minds. And that's why I'm just like, who is a pro? Would be a skeptic. And I think you're right. Like Jarvis being a trials rider and being so heavy on clutch use and, you know, the low power and control.
Yeah.
That if he got on one and did well and embraced it, that it would be a game changer because it would take a lot to change that guy's mind. Like, I mean, he's a crusty old bugger. He doesn't want to get on something new.
Absolutely. And someone like Manny or Billy, like obviously they can get on one and hey, y'all it up the side of a mountain.
Yeah.
But because they're just phenomenal riders, but I don't think that would necessarily
change people's minds.
Change people's minds because, like, oh yeah, of course I can do that because they're who they are.
Yeah, yeah, he was an amazing rider, so and it makes sense that he would be an amazing rider.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. He could ride a 92 CR250 better than I could ride my current 300.
Yeah, but okay. So Johnny, have you threw Walker on there? That would change my mind because he's doing okay.
And he's
competitive. He's in there on the beta.
He's done the factory KTM thing. He's gone it. Away from it. He's a privateer guy. I agree.
I think he'd try hard to sell it.
Yeah. He made third place on the Super Enduro, by the way, with his two-stroke
guy. He's in there and he's fighting, but he's not winning. And if you threw him on one and he embraced it, pitched it and won on it, that would change my mind because he's so close and
consistently podiuming. Not that I'm saying
the beta is holding him back at all.
Nope.
I just that someone scenario like that, unfolding. Yeah. I think he's enough of an underdog that
and
not
someone like Gomez just is in the same Webb situation. I think where he's like he's up there but he's not so like he's not as influency as other people are.
I see Webb nerding on the tech, but I just not the right kind of followers.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like they're not rabid. They're not like, you know, frothing at the mouth for anything. Like, I mean, I'm obviously a huge fan, but you know, like we say like Bolt and Manny fans are like, there's so much more drive there.
Myself.
A little more rabid.
exactly. I think
so. They're gonna pull through. Are they gonna build them?
Yeah, I think they're gonna do it.
Yeah
I believe in the turtleneck. I'm sure that's where all this ingenuity comes from.
As I'm sure we concluded our podcast number four, that these are coming and we believe it's the future. I'm sure that there's a lot of people out there that disagree and, you know, love their two strokes and that's all they ever need. And
that's also the other thing with, I think fuel injection took a long time to get embraced as well.
Yeah.
I mean, there was definitely some growing pains there, but at this point now, I think that's just standard too.
Yeah. Right? It's like, a change. And the other, like, you know, working in prototyping and R&D, that the first iteration is never, you learn so much from getting that first prototype or first run out and so much feedback. The second one is so much better that I like.
Yeah, I agree. You know,
it's even if this first one gets out, very excited. I hope it does really well and they sell a lot and it changes people's minds. But the feedback that they'll get just from having 5,000 riders on their bikes
And 700 dealerships
and 700 dealers feeding back in what works and what didn't, that next bike, I mean, you know, some of the unique features, like you mentioned, the clickers on the back, maybe the feedback is that those,
they get full of mud and they wind up. Get
full of mud and you stop feeling the clickers and it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
And they go, okay, you know what? And the second one has a ratcheting mechanism instead, and maybe it auto tensions your chain, like, yeah, or something different. Who knows? Or they just do away with it, but it'll be better.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
I'm rooting for them.
Definitely. Definitely. So let's get into maybe the downsides now we're there.
Oh, no.
Well, yeah, potential downsides, I should say. Yeah. Like things that I could see could go wrong.
Yeah.
The skid plate that comes with the bike is a structural one that's part of the frame.
Yeah, so once that gets mangled.
Yeah, or like I've been recently like landing on concrete barriers a lot.
Yeah, and you don't want to be just smashing your frame.
Yeah, and I don't know if you'd be able to replace that with like a thicker, sturdier aftermarket one.
Yeah.
Or the other option. Like, I'm sure for motocross it'll be fine, but for an enduro rider, having the concrete barriers, the rocks, the whatever.
Even trails bikes, you have like that steel insert in between.
Yeah.
That, you know, basically just sits against the motor and you have a little kind of rubber pad and.
Yeah, exactly.
Mashing it all the time.
So that's the something that I'm not so sure about. I think the off-roaders being hard on equipment might run into issues with that. Because it's nice to be able to have it replaceable for a decent price, because obviously that's a wearable item.
Yeah.
I don't think there's two ways around that.
She dropped another big bomb in there. That's a big con.
Yeah.
The aftermarket.
The aftermarket.
So there's like a ton of stuff for the Brembo stuff and all the like individual components. Like I'm sure like revalving gold valves for race deck and the suspension and stuff like that. But
so this is exactly my other note too.
But bike specific.
Having sourcing out aftermarket parts could potentially be problematic. Like plastics or whatever.
Yeah.
But maybe you'd be able to go through other brands to get said parts, such as Yamaha for KYB or Beta for KYB and KTM for Brembo stuff.
Yeah, I think all the bolt-on things, like I swapped levers between my KTM and my Sherco for the Brembo brakes. Like they're pretty common. There's a couple of models that as long as you know which of them you have, it's pretty easy to interchange. But the bike specific things, like you mentioned the plastics, like how long would these bikes need to be around before like UFO starts ripping off their plastics and copying them?
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe they're just, they make them super cheap. But the other thing is like supply chain. Are they going to have enough plastics? Like if you rip a shroud off this thing and you need a new one, do they have
them fairly readily available?
Yeah. If they're making, would you say 5,000 bikes a year?
Yeah.
Like you're going to need four for every rider a year. Like,
yeah, absolutely. You need so many.
You'll need at least 5,000 extra shrouds because people are going to be tearing them off. And for every guy who's like, oh yeah, I go through one every 2 years, you got a guy who goes through two every year.
Yeah, exactly. Both of those people are sitting in the room.
Yeah. I just think of like the aftermarket volume and supporting the demand on those plastics. Like how long would that take before you can just go on 4.9 and order an extra side shroud from UFO or...
Or Ace Riss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Serby.
I know. See,
there's an awkward eyebrow going across the table here.
Yeah. I still don't know how to say it. I think it's Ace Riss.
Yeah. I've heard it differently in their videos. Like, I'm not sure they know how to say it.
Yeah. It's like Beta and Beta. Yeah. So that was one thing I was a little not so sure about.
It's like a volume thing too, right? Like 5,000 bikes isn't a lot. I mean, it's a lot. It's great for them.
Not worldwide a lot though.
But yeah.
Yeah. Your friendly neighborhood hoser isn't going to just have one around.
Yeah, no one's going to have these kicking around. Yeah.
Like it'll be interesting to see.
Front fenders for KTMs. Oh, you broke a KTM front fender? Here, I got one laying around that's got two zip ties in it instead of being shattered.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that is going to be a little bit of the growing pains, I think, until they get out there widely enough. So it'll probably be a few years before they're like common.
Yeah.
And you're starting to be able to pick them up used and what have you.
The open source dirt bike.
Open source dirt bike.
Yeah. Where all the parts are public domain.
Yes. I know. That'd be good.
That's a crazy idea.
Yeah. So also, I'd really like to see like you were saying, a road legal version. Yeah. Like an EXC.
Yeah.
Because why not?
Yeah. Elsa did it. I mean, you don't have any emissions to follow. Like, as long as you put the turn signals on it that meet, yeah. You don't have to do the sound rating. You don't have the emission stuff.
Yeah, you put cute little LED
like it's signals
on it, headlight.
Yeah, it's so... I would think that getting an electric bike road legal is like a matter of tires and, you know, tires, tubes, and putting some turn signals and a headlight on it. Like,
yeah. No, I think it'd be great.
All the biggest hurdles are already taken care of.
Totally. Especially if you got the rear handbrake as well. Like you just put those little switches in.
Yeah.
And
you got just the brake pressure lights switches and away you go. Yeah.
Totally. So yeah, I think that.
And they already exist. All that stuff exists for Brembo exactly. too. Like it's bolt on.
Yeah.
You just need, does it have a headlight on
nope.
the? No.
No. Because it's, only. They developed it as a motocross bike.
Yeah.
Is what they initially have done.
Yeah.
So
it's a bigger market. I mean,
it really is.
As much as the off-road's emerging.
I think the motocross is more spendy too, I think.
Yeah.
Replacing bikes more often.
The
guys
with the Ford Raptors just throwing it out there.
yeah. Exactly. New KTM 450 every year. But yeah, so that's one thing I'd like. See a headlight on them. Yeah. Some street legal. Because a supermoto Stark Varg would be unreal.
Yeah.
But yeah. And 80 horsepower, so passing, yeah, no problem. It should be out of hand.
Yeah.
But yeah. So that's my thing. Because I really do like, I prefer headlights and the XCW look.
Yeah.
Whatever.
It's an interesting, you know, I guess it depends on which way you came into it. You find guys who came from the motocross world into the enduro world. They love their number plates.
Yeah, they love number plates.
And it just looks weird to have the XC bikes. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just looks weird to them to have a headlight on there. But if you come from like the on-road world and the dual sports, the headlight is, I don't know, it just looks right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm stuck in the middle where I put a number plate on just because it's cheaper to replace.
Yeah, so you're too cheap to keep smashing the headlights.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't afford that investment for multiple headlights a year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that's the practical in between, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'll
have the headlight sitting on there, sitting on the shelf for...
Exactly. For if my...
The darker times
of year. Yeah, or yeah, if I ever want to put it on the road again or whatever.
Yeah.
On the road again. Yeah. So that's one thing I'd like. I think that'd be a great option to have, especially if you can do that right on your online order.
Yeah.
I would like road legal. Road legalized.
Yeah.
So yeah. But that's our show.
Okay.
I think that's about it. That's all the information I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, hopefully this Anton Wass knows what he's doing and we actually get a good bike out of the deal.
Yeah.
But it's looking pretty good. Very promising.
Like, it's got good components on it out of the gate, which is...
Huge.
Yeah. Like...
Yeah, as long as the geometry and stuff's there, which I don't see how it wouldn't be.
And there's like some pretty big geometry now where it's like, okay, this is what works.
Yeah.
Everyone's kind of settled on it.
Yeah, exactly.
There's not any crazy trends or anything going on.
No, and I think even like KTM's had the same geometry since 2017 or wherever it was.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Up till, 22.
But I don't even think that was a significant change for the like 2012 on bikes.
From the 14 to 16s?
Yeah, but even before that, you go back to 12, I think.
Yeah,
The black fender, the black plastic on top of the front fender, but still the same chassis.
For sure. Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. But it's very exciting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if there's nothing else you need to add.
Just let us know what you think. Would you buy an electric bike? HardEnduroHosers.com. Drop us a voicemail. Check us out at HardEnduroHosers on Instagram.
Or you can slide into our DMs at Hardenduro Hosers on Instagram.
Yeah.
Did you just say that?
Yeah, that's what I was dropping.
Oh.
Give you a show.
Oh, yeah.
I played your Instagram for you.
Oh, man. You're such a nice guy.
Yeah. Should we roll it all in?
Oh, my goodness.
Well.
Okay.
Hope everyone's out there enjoying the spring weather, getting riding. Yeah,
the sunshine. Time of
year, sun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Days getting longer.
It's riding season, y'all.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening, and we will catch you in the next one.